Hey everyone, and thank you for joining us, and welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast. We appreciate your support and have a special interview and episode for you today. So sit back, relax, and enjoy learning about sports and opportunities around the world. Here comes the music. I gotta let you go.
He goes, I'll give you $750,000 a year to sign with us.
Without even showing off.
He goes, don't even walk over to the field.
Because I had no idea that my passport was even expired.
Let me tell you, I sent out 6,000 emails.
You don't know how to use a celebrity for good. You know, up until that point, most of us as athletes were taught how to use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, Jay, get me out.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over it.
You finished the game with a broken hand?
Yeah, I finished the game.
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
There are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey my last season.
Okay. This episode is also brought to you by our friends over at Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Louisville, Texas, brought to you by Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to bring success to the lives of young men in ways in which they may have not reached that success otherwise. One of the ways in which they do this is through their professional basketball team, the Louisville Yellow Jackets, who play in TBL or the Basketball League. Make sure you go check out Creating Young Minds on all major platforms, including Facebook and LinkedIn. I encourage you to dive more into the mission of Creating Young Minds as they strive to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. Thank you.
Okay, Mike, so to start off, let's have you introduce who you are and what you did or do.
Okay. So this is Mike Singletary. I'm a professional basketball player playing currently in Asia right now.
And so are you in Asia right now, currently?
I will be leaving to go to Asia probably right now. I'm scheduled to leave about the halfway point in October.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we'll get to the specifics of where you're going in a minute, but let's start off as far as starting in high school here.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you realize that college ball was in your future?
Oh man. For me, honestly, I was kind of one of those lucky kids that, I kind of knew it was a possibility early on for me. I think my first, college offer was honestly in, seventh grade. So I was kind of one of those lucky guys that, really I knew, kind of from the get-go that I was probably going to play college ball. And honestly, in my mind at that point, it was obviously I'm going to play in the NBA or strive to play in the NBA. Obviously, like the dream that most kids have at that point.
Who was giving you offers in seventh grade?
I had a few. I'm not going to go ahead and put those schools out there. That's but fair. They were big time schools. I was big for my age, especially in seventh grade. I was, you know, I was 6'2", which is pretty big for, you know, for most guys. If you're 6'2", and I was supremely skilled. So it was kind of, I knew it was a possibility kind of early on.
And so where were you growing up then in seventh grade and high school on?
So I grew up in the Houston area. So I grew up in I actually went to Kingwood High School. So it's north Houston. Is where I kind of grew up and started playing.
Okay, so I'm going to assume following, you know, a guy who's getting offers in seventh grade is going to continue to get them in high school. And so you start getting them more and more, and eventually you make your decision. And where did college ball take you?
So college ball took me to Texas Tech University. At the time, for me, obviously Bob Knight was the coach whenever, so he recruited me. So obviously it's amazing to get recruited by a coach that's so, you know, so popular in terms of being one of the greatest coaches to ever coach this basketball period. So the thought for to be able to play for him and to be able to for him hopefully to, you know, not only make me better as a player, but also make me better as a person was something that was super intriguing and something that lured me to Texas Tech.
Now, location, I would assume, also had some sort of pull going to Texas Tech, correct?
Yeah, so Lubbock is actually 9 hours. It's about a 9-hour drive. So
okay.
The opposite side of Texas. But it okay. was still, for me, it was far enough, but also close enough. So that way, if I did ever, you know, need to be home for any reason or anything like that, it's a short flight. And I really wanted to stay in the state of Texas.
So you get recruited by Bob Knight, who, even for somebody younger who might not be familiar with coaches farther back, that's a name they're going to know is Bob Knight. I would assume intimidation big time. I would be scared of him. I couldn't imagine anything else.
Big time. Big time. I think the biggest thing for me when I met him the first time, which the first time I met him face to face was actually in my home. So he showed up at my doorstep, and first thing that stood out to me was I didn't realize how big of a guy he is. Like,
really,
he's every bit of 6'5", and I mean he's a big guy. I mean every bit. He's a big guy, and obviously you hear the stories and you hear. You know, you see the throne of the chair, you see that clip over and over. And so obviously there's intimidation there. But for me, what the biggest thing for him was he kind of didn't sugarcoat anything. And I think that's something that attracted me to playing for him. But also I think it was a good thing for my parents because my parents felt like he was just telling them the truth. He wasn't going to tell them and feed them lines of, hey, Mike's going to come in here and he's going to start right away or he's going to, you know, do X, Y, Z. He told me, I'd love to have you come play for my program, but you're going to have to earn everything that you get. So for me, that was a challenge. And for me, that was something that, you know, that I liked more than some of the other college coaches that were around and talking to me at the time.
And so I know it was Texas Tech wasn't the only one who was taking it serious to the level of going to your house or at least meeting you in person, right? I mean, yeah, you were having these other coaches come up.
Mm-hmm, yeah, there's a lot of coaches at that point. Yeah.
How could you tell that Bob Knight wasn't feeding you a bunch of lines? How could you tell that those other schools weren't serious if they said, Mike, you're going to start year one?
Because for me, I think. When you're a freshman, and this is something that obviously has changed over the course of even when I was in high school till now, obviously basketball is evolving and obviously these players that are coming out of high school are getting better and better. But it's just a different game. Going from high school to college is just completely different. Especially as a freshman, you're playing against guys who have been in the college program for, you know, 2 years, 3 years, even, you know, on their fourth year. It's a big jump. So even as supremely talented as you may be, there's not only a physical growth that you have to have, but also it's more so mentally because obviously you're having to go to your classes. You're having to do all these things and still be able to perform when called upon. So for me, I knew that, hey, I thought I could start. I believed I could start. But I thought for me, I don't know if that would have been in the best interest of me and my growth and my development. I think the best thing for me to do at that point in time was to sit back and see how these older guys and some of the guys that have been there before and have proven themselves, how they worked, how they approached the game, how they approached college in general, and just kind of go from there and learn and grow. And then when it was my opportunity to shine, to be able to do so.
And that's what Bob told you was going to happen when you get there.
And for me, yeah, he said, you know, if you start, he said, it's going to be because you earned it. And for me, that was a big thing because that meant, hey, nothing was going to be given to me because I was one of the, you know, the top recruits that you were looking at. It was, hey, I know you're a top recruit, but also, if you're not willing to put in the work, then, you know, I'm not going to give you a certain amount of minutes just because you feel like you deserve a certain amount of minutes. So I respected that. And, honestly, I admire him for that.
And so let's talk a little bit about your time before we go on to after college, your experience at Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. Walk us through that. What was that experience like?
For me, it was a little different, obviously. I went into it thinking that Coach Knight was going to be there, that I was going to be the recruiting class that he was going to have. So I was thinking I was going to have him for all 4 years. Sadly, that did not happen. Had him 1 year. Maybe half of a year because he retired within our season, and then I had his son the rest of my time at Tech, and things just didn't go the way that obviously I thought they would have gone and hoped that they would have gone, but for me it's something that I learned from and grew a lot from, and it's made me a much better player as a pro than I ever was even in college.
And so, you know, when Bob retired, was that something that was sudden for you guys as players?
Oh, yeah. That was we knew it was coming. And a lot of the guys that were in my recruiting class, we actually had a really good recruiting class that year. We had, you know, we were one of the top recruiting classes in Texas. And so we were thinking, okay, this will be his last guys that he sees on, you know, he sees out. And when it didn't happen that way, it was kind of a shock to us because we felt like it was something that happened super abruptly. But also at the same time, I know he was probably dealing with some other things that we don't necessarily know. And he made the best decision for him. And, you know, I can't fault him for that. But it did have a kind of an effect on us and our recruiting class and made us kind of question if we should stay or what we should do.
Did you guys lose anybody after that?
We lost a few guys, but from our recruiting class decided to stay. So luckily, the guys that I came in with decided that, you know, we were going to ride it out, and we chose the university and we chose the program over just Coach Knight.
And so anything, you know, when a head coach will leave even midseason like that, it could be a huge mess and you would never expect it to be perfect. What was the transition? Was it rough or was it better than you'd expect?
It was rough. I think it was rough. The system that Pat wanted to implement was similar, but also different. And at that time, in college basketball, a lot of colleges were going and getting junior college guys, right? So at the point you could get junior college guys and you could have them for 2 years, but they were a little bit older, you know, probably a little bit more experienced because they had been playing at that level for, you know, in junior college, it's a different level, right? Other than high school guys, you're different. So we went that route a lot, and it kind of caused for us, kind of caused a lot of a lack of continuity, I think, in our program. And we had so much turnover within my last 3 years of guys coming in and not working out and guys leaving. And so it was a little tough, and there was a lot of growing pains. And we didn't at the end of the day, we didn't do what we should have done in terms of achieving the level of basketball for our program that we felt like we should have in our time there.
Do you think when you look at people's potential as they grow and how it turns out in their professional playing career, there's a lot of things that can happen that probably aren't their fault. You know, look at injuries, but I also think about coaching changes like this. Do you think this mix up and this change and this shift affected your potential as far as what would happen after college?
I like to think that it didn't affect my potential. I think if anything, like I said, I think it made me better because I had to learn a lot about myself in terms of, hey, look, you got to grow, man. You got to, even when things aren't going your way in terms of you feel like you should be playing more or you should be doing this or whatever it may be, it's all within your hands. You know, you control that. So if you want to play more minutes or if you want to do, you know, you want to be a better player, you got to put in the work and then you got to perform and you got to do what you need to do. You can't let the other things distract you from that. And I think in college, I definitely let some of that outside stuff distract me more than I should have.
All right. So let's move on here then. Following college, what was the first step after college?
So first step after college for me was just trying to get an agent. At that point, you know, I had a few agents that had reached out to me and wanted to, you know, obviously be my agent and represent me. And, you know, we wanted to go through the whole, you know, draft process and all that stuff. But unfortunately, it didn't happen for me. So we felt like the next best thing was to go to international route. And we did that, and it's kind of led me to where I am today. And it's one of the best things I've done in terms of being a professional athlete and a basketball player. Going internationally for me was the best thing to happen to me, for sure.
So did you, before that even happened, did you get any workouts, any summer league play, anything like that with the NBA?
No workouts, no summer league.
Okay. And you personally, for you, was that a shock when it happened or not? Or were, for you?
For me, I think it was a shock because okay. I think I felt like I could definitely play at that level. But also, you know, my program didn't do well. So
yeah.
When you don't have a program that isn't, you know, that isn't doing well, no matter what you're doing individually, sometimes that can get washed out, you know? So for me, a lot of times if your program is, you know, if your program is super successful and you might not have all the individual stats that maybe another guy has, but you might get looked at differently because you were on a super successful team. So a lot of teams, especially in the NBA, feel like that will translate. And, you know, a lot of times it does and sometimes it doesn't, but that's just kind of how it goes. So to me, it was a little bit of a shock, but also at the same time, it is what it is, man.
Right. Absolutely. And, but, you know, going on to that professional, you have to keep those emotions in check. And I would assume the answer to this, but did you see people you played with in college or maybe high school who got that chance in the NBA or the summer league? And you thought, I am so much better than them. What's going on?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, you have that all the time. I mean, you have it all the time. So, but you know, the part about that though is just one of those things, man. You can't look at it like that. You know, you got to run your race is what I was always told. Like, run your race. Whatever your race is, run your race. So, for me, I had to get to a point of, you know, like you said, just kind of drowning out that noise and, you know, and looking at it as a comparison thing of me versus this guy, and look at it like, hey, okay, you got an opportunity to go play. You still got an opportunity to play professional basketball and get paid to do something you love to do. And you get to go travel the world. So, you know, approach that, you know, the same way that you would, even if you were, you know, if you were getting drafted in the NBA, approach it the same way. So, when I finally had that mentality, things definitely decided to change for me.
And so, you know, talking about you running your race, what was that very first place you went, team you played for, situation you were in?
So my first job out was in Belgium, and I played for Verviers Pepinster. So definitely a culture shock, and definitely something that helped me grow too. It was definitely a really, really tough situation for me. Granted, I was there. I didn't make it the entire year. I left after 4 months. But in those 4 months, man, it was a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And I had still a lot of growing to do in terms of my mentality as a basketball player and just handling it as a professional.
So was it going home a you choice or was it a team choice?
It was a mutual thing. Okay. I felt like I wasn't getting utilized the way that I should have been getting utilized. And mm-hmm. The team felt, you know, hey, we're going to go another route. So we both just decided, hey, it's probably best for both of us just to, you know, kind of separate and go from there.
And so I assume then there wasn't a season commitment contract. It was more of a game to game, week to week, month to month, maybe.
So we had a season. It was a season contract. Okay. But if you come most times, if you come to an agreement with the team and say, hey, mm-hmm. you know, we want to go our separate ways. Most of the time they'll be, you know, they'll kind of meet you at a point and kind of give you a somewhat of a settlement, I guess you can say. And then you guys go your separate ways.
Sure. Okay. So you go back home, and where was the next stop?
Next stop was, I didn't want to go overseas again. So
really
that first job had, kind of deterred me from wanting to go overseas again. So I decided I was going to play in the G League or the D League at that point. And so I played in the D League for that year, that following year. And, yeah, and grew.
Who'd you play with in the D League?
So I played with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers.
Okay. Okay.
So my head coach was Nick Nurse. So yeah, you're pretty good.
Yeah. So what eventually changed that in you that led you to want to go overseas again?
Honestly, at that point, the D League was just not a viable option financially. It's definitely not what it is now, which I'm super yeah. happy that is such a better option now for a lot of guys, because a lot of guys to go overseas and to play internationally is really, really tough. It's really, really hard. So I'm glad to see it is where it is today. And just at that point, financially, it just wasn't the best option for me at the time.
So then once you did decide to go back overseas, where were you next?
So after that, when I went overseas, my next job was in the Philippines. So that was my first, taste of Asia at that point. And from then on, it's been Asia since, for the most part.
So the Globally Balling podcast, what you're on or will be on, we have a network, and all of our other shows are based in the Philippines. So we have a large listenership in the Philippines. So they're going to be excited to hear from you. But where was team – who did you play for in the Philippines?
So I played for – the team I played for at the time was Barako Bull.
Okay.
So I played in the I guess it's the PBA.
Yeah. And what conference were you in? Yeah. Do you remember?
So I guess when – we played in, I played in the, with the way the Philippines is, I don't know if you necessarily know, but the way the Philippines is they have three separate conferences. So they have mm-hmm. one that's all Filipino conference, and they have one that's, you can have an import of any height. And then the next one is 6'6" and under. So I played in the 6'6" and under conference, and usually goes for about 3 months. So I was there about 3 to 4 months in the Philippines, and that was my first Asia job.
And so we might park on your experiences in the Philippines a little bit longer than the others, but while you were in the Philippines, what was your experience like playing there?
Man, I loved it. I honestly, I love everything about the Philippines. I love the people. I love the culture. I love their love for basketball, honestly. So for me, it was like a match made in heaven. I loved playing there, and you know, till this day, it's one of my favorite places that I've ever played.
And all right, so while you were there, mm-hmm. Your experience off the court, was there time for anything else, or was it practice day, practice evening, and everything else? What did that off the court schedule look like for you in the Philippines?
Well, in the Philippines, it's kind of different because in the Philippines, you actually are given a good amount of time. Most of the time, you're not doing 2 days. Most of the time, you're only having one practice, and then whatever else you want to do to get your body right, and you know, whether that's lifting weights or whatever you're doing. So there's a lot of free time, The only thing with the Philippines is when you play in the PBA and people see you on the TV, it almost becomes one of those things where you don't necessarily want to go out too much because you get bombarded. And it's a great thing. It's a great thing and super cool. But also at the same time, sometimes it can be a lot to, you know, just want to go have lunch or whatever it may be. And you got 30 people surrounding you asking you to take pictures. 30 to 40 people at your table asking you to take pictures. So it's cool, but also at the same time, it's one of those things that it's kind of difficult to kind of adjust to.
So we've talked in the past about, not specifically, but players who were there for a game, maybe two, and were sent home from the Philippines.
Yeah.
And that part of that is the distractions that come with playing in a place where the atmosphere is so high. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it worked for you, but can you speak to the distractions overtaking anybody in the Philippines? Maybe not personally that you knew or anything like that, though?
I mean, it happens. I mean, and honestly, a lot of the distractions can come from, like you said, outside, but also the distractions can come from just your ability just to not perform. And whatever that is, and in the Philippines, the conference is so short that they want to win every game. I mean, no matter what team you are, they're trying to win every game. And if you come out there and you're not playing up to the level that they feel like you should be playing, they feel like they can go find another import who will do much more. So it's really cutthroat, but also at the same time, I think that's a great thing because it forces these guys and especially these imports to be on your A game. And obviously you want to play at your highest level. So why not have that sort of pressure on you? And granted, some people can handle it and some people can't. It's just, you know, it's just the nature of being a professional athlete and especially playing in the Philippines.
So how did the season end up then for you?
So we actually, we were picked to be one of the bottom teams. We actually ended up getting a first round bye and we actually ended up doing pretty well. I think we lost in the semis maybe. So overall, it was for me, I feel like it was a super successful season, especially based on what people thought we were, how we were going to finish. So I was pleased with it overall.
All right. Good. So following the Philippines, what was your next step? Coming home or going straight somewhere else? What was next?
So after the Philippines, went home, and I think my next job was maybe, I think I actually got another job in Europe, actually, and it was in Montenegro. And I think I came just, I think they had an injury or, so I was only there a short period of time, maybe 3 or 4 months. But that was my next job. And then after that job, then after that, it's pretty much back to Asia again for the rest of the time.
So just that little bit right there of you saying, I think, I'm not sure, for the people that have listened to this before, have heard that before. Mm-hmm. For those that have played a lot overseas, it blends together. You get so many opportunities and you're going all over the place.
Right.
And maybe shorter seasons. And there's a lot of bouncing around and it merges together a lot. And you can forget about some of these opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's like for me, it'll be year 10. So a lot of times there's situations where some of these leagues are shorter than, you know, year long commitments. And sometimes you're in a place for 3 or 4 months, sometimes 6 months, sometimes 10 months. So with that being said, you're just trying to obviously get as many jobs as you can and play almost year round if it's possible. Most people try to play year round if it's possible. And if you have the ability to do that, that's kind of where it all just kind of merges together a little bit.
And so, okay, so moving on, when you got to Asia this time around, did you end up being in the same league, same country at the time, or were you bouncing around the region?
So the next time I went back to Asia, I actually went to Japan. And then after Japan, then I was in, I got another job back in the Philippines again. So I was in the Philippines twice. And then from after that, it was, I was in Thailand for 3 years. Yeah, 3 years.
Okay, so you went from Japan, Philippines, and then Thailand to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Was this in a span of 5 years, or are you talking more than one in 1 year?
It was, you know, it was in a span of 5 years. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So each of them was kind of longer term. The shortest one was the Philippines, obviously, because their conference is, you know, 3 to 4 months. But Thailand, I was there for. I was in Thailand 10 months out of the year for all 3 years, for the most part, playing basically year round. So, in a span of about 5 years.
Who did you play with in for those three places? So starting with Japan, do you remember?
So Japan was Osaka Ivesa. And then, the Philippines was, San Miguel Bierman when I was in the Philippines, who is, you know, one of the best teams.
That's a prestigious team to play for.
If not, the best team, they pretty much win constantly. And then in Thailand, I played for the Mono Vampires.
Okay, were you with Mono the whole time?
The whole time I was in Thailand, I was with Mono. Yeah.
Did you ever do any Asian or Asian Basketball League ever? I pronounce it wrong every single time.
So we played in the ABL. So I played in the ABL, I guess it would be like 2.5 years.
Okay.
So when I went to Mono my first year, we weren't in the ABL. But then we joined my second year.
So okay, we and did in that
ABL for 2 years.
Did you have the same Mono squad that played in your Thailand League and the ABL?
Yeah, so we actually at one point were playing in both leagues. We were playing in our local Thai league, but also playing in the ABL as well. So, same squad, a lot of basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. And ABL is, for a good reason, is usually considered higher than those local leagues because you're playing teams in other countries. And if you have the same squad, logic would dictate that you should dominate in Thailand. Anything true to that?
Yeah, we won a few championships. I think we won 3 championships. I think I won 2 MVPs. And I mean, we won a lot, especially in the local league. We won a lot.
What was the import rule in Thailand? Is it just one?
So in the Thai local league, you can have 2 imports, but they can't be on the floor at the same time. Just have to kind of alternate, figure out, you know, how to split minutes between both guys.
Do they have rules on height in any way or not?
No rules on height. So whichever, you know, whoever you wanted to have, you know, that's the team that you went with.
So Philippines, I and the listeners are familiar with the atmosphere there. How did Japan and Thailand and ABL compare to that?
Ooh, man, that's tough. I think it depends. You know, some places, Japan definitely has a love. They have a love for basketball, but they're a little bit more subdued, I think, in some places for the most part. Obviously the Philippines, their love is almost like it's unreal. It takes me back to like college days playing, you know, against a rival. They're loud, they're passionate. They like you, they dislike you. it's all of those in between. So, there's a little bit different, but the ABL too can be, just like that in the Philippines. Obviously there's a Philippines team in ABL. So whenever you go play there, obviously you get a little bit of that, that Filipino passion. But also in some of these other countries, man, they have some really, really diehard fans who love the game of basketball.
And so in Thailand, then, were you playing in the same city all the time, or did teams represent different areas? Like in the Philippines, obviously, the teams are represented by a company, and you guys play in similar locations. were locations represented by teams in Thailand or Japan?
So Japan is more kind of like the Philippines. So you have companies, obviously, that you're playing for mostly. But Japan, there's a lot more travel with Japan than there is in the Philippines. When you're in the Philippines, you're usually playing kind of centralized because most teams are in Manila. Every team's in Manila. So there's really not a whole bunch of travel. And that was kind of the same way in Thailand. We didn't travel much whenever we played in the local Thai league. We played at the same gym. We would play Saturday and Sunday. So it was kind of similar. They're all kind of similar, but Japan was the one that had more travel than the other two leagues.
All right. And so where is this next stop that you've been talking about that you're going to next?
So the next stop will be in Taiwan. I will be playing with the Fubon Braves in their local Thai league, but also coming up for when the next ABL season starts, hopefully.
Has there been any word on ABL? Do you know?
So from what I've heard is they seem to believe that it's going to happen. They're just trying to kind of narrow down when that may be. So it might be a shortened league that'll start 2021, which is kind of similar to how some leagues are doing it. Some leagues won't start until after the new year anyway. So I'm hoping that it all works out and that the ABL is actually able to come back, because I think it was on its way to becoming the league was getting better and better and better. And last year was a really, really tough league. So hopefully it can continue to grow with more and more teams and continue to be competitive.
Right. And for those who weren't familiar, we had Kevin Yurkis, head coach of the Saigon Heat, on a couple episodes ago talking about the potential future and the rumors about the ABL and what might happen and all that stuff. So basically saying the same thing you did. The goal is to play in 2021 and we'll see what happens. Some things are out of their control, but definitely a fun league to watch when you get, you know, once you get out of those borders and start playing neighboring countries, the whole atmosphere changes, which is awesome.
Completely, completely.
So, Michael, to end here, one thing we love to do with somebody who's playing in more than one spot is I give you a category and you just tell me which one of those leagues or countries or experiences was best in that category. You can always say pass. Don't want you to burn any bridges. But it gives our listeners and our specifically the athletes who watch an opportunity to know what's out there outside of the United States.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, for example, we'll start with something like in-game atmosphere.
Yeah. Ooh. Philippines.
Philippines?
Yeah.
Off the court, where were you the biggest celebrity?
Thailand.
Thailand. Interesting. I was banking on Philippines playing for San Miguel, but Thailand. Okay.
Yeah.
Team doctors or team health?
Team doctors, health. Thailand.
Food.
Philippines.
Interesting. Workout ability, like your facilities or where you're able to work out, stuff like that.
Thailand.
Weather.
Ah, man. Thailand.
And then this last one here, you obviously don't go for this, but as far as leisure time, which one offered the best opportunity for that while still keeping you a professional basketball player?
I'd probably say the Philippines. There's a lot.
Philippines.
Yeah.
What would you tell an athlete watching something that they probably don't know that you think that they should about an experience you've had or experiences you continue to have playing overseas?
Oh, man. I just tell a lot of guys, especially overseas, is really, really don't think that when you get overseas that it's just going to be easy, because it's just not basketball. A lot of people think it's just basketball. It's not. For example, you're in a different country. You don't speak the language for most places. For some people, they're by themselves. They don't have family members with them. And depending on how long you're there, if it can feel super isolating. So my advice always is to go into it, trying to dive into the culture. I think that's the biggest thing, right? When you dive into the culture of the place that you're in and you try to make it feel as home as you can, everything gets easier, I think. Then basketball becomes so much easier because you feel at home or you feel comfortable. Now, sometimes, obviously, that's not it's just not possible to be the case. Sometimes it's hard to feel at home in some of these other places. But the more you make it feel at home, the easier the transition is for me. That's kind of what I've learned over my time is, I try to just dive into the culture and the people and really, really try to make it a home, whether I'm there for, 3 months, 4 months or longer. That helps a lot.
What would be, if you had to give your best and your worst experience or situation that you had to overcome or really enjoyed playing overseas?
Ooh, best. Okay, I'll start with the worst. The worst experience I've had is I was in South America at one point, and it was a quick job. I was just filling in for an injury replacement, and I was only going to be there, not very long, only a couple games. And I handed them my passport. Obviously, you have to hand your passport to, they need to make copies and different things like that. And I didn't get my passport back until they told me I was going home, and I was booked, and I had my flight booked. Knocked on my apartment door, slipped my passport underneath my apartment door, and yeah, no communication until that point.
How long had they had it?
2 weeks. We literally was on the verge of calling, trying to call passport. Like government, government officials and people, literally being like, hey, I'm a U.S. citizen. You might have to come get me or send something for me to be able to get out of here. Yeah.
Did you play any games during that span of time?
I played two games.
I can't imagine that was anything but icy going to play games and be like, I'm playing for you, but I need that passport back.
The thing was, I had already played two games. And so after that, there was another job for me. So I was, we knew that I wasn't going to be there long. So it was kind of one of those things, Mike's not going to play anymore because we can't get Mike hurt because he's got this other opportunity. And so I don't know if they felt some sort of way about that, but they kept my passport and had me really, really on my toes for about a week and a half holed up in an apartment.
We had, oh my goodness. And that just reminds me of another episode we had with an agent we had on. And I said, what's a story like that? And he said, well, he had a client call him. I think he was playing in Venezuela and he got arm robbed that night. And he's just like, dude, get me out of here. And so that night just flew him back home. Yep. And so that is some of the stories you definitely don't hear is some of those you're in a whole nother world, man. You're at the mercy of whoever you're playing for.
People don't realize that, especially when you go to some of these countries, man, that you're in the upper, you're in the upper echelon of like percentage of, they think you're, whether or not you're making, really, really great money, they believe you are.
They think you are.
Because you're a professional athlete. So in some of these places where there is a lot of poverty and a lot of, people who aren't doing well, they see you as an American and they see you as a, you're an easy target. So you just always got to be on your P's and Q's, man, and just making sure you know what's around you and making sure you're, kind of staying as safe as possible.
Did you ever have, and that's one that I usually comes up in our little category game, as far as which one you felt the safest in? Was there any one that hands down felt safer than other ones?
For me, I think Japan
okay.
and Thailand felt the safest. Japan, we were in a huge city. We're in Osaka. Osaka's, one of the biggest cities in Japan, and it's, kind of Americanized a little bit. So, we didn't stand out as much.
All right, and then let's get the best experience.
Okay. Best
experience. Get the bad one out of the way.
Best experience. Best experience for me, I think, was will be Thailand. For me, it's been home to me for the last 3 years. Obviously, like I said earlier, my 3-year-old son has been there and has watched me play there for 3 years, and my wife's been with us, and obviously there, and we've made it home. We've met friends, and friends that we have till this day that will always be friends, and it's always, we just kind of made it a home. And so that Thailand, and that will always hold like a special place in my heart for sure, just because of the love they showed for me and the love they showed for my family.
So family comes with you. Good. That's
always. I've me and my wife have done this ever since we got married at 22. That's ever since our first job in Belgium. We have said, no matter the job, we're always going together. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. I've been lucky enough to be able to have that.
Have you known or had to see anybody who, not that they didn't want a wife or kids to come with them, but maybe weren't able to, and the effect that had on them?
Oh yeah, that's huge, man. Can you imagine? Having, your kids across international, international waters or wherever you may be, and only being able to see them over a screen. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine. And to be able to not only have to deal with that, but your spouse, and but also having to be out there to go out there and really, really perform and to provide for your family. It's definitely not for, it's not for everybody. So for me, I try to, I've been lucky enough to obviously be able to take my family everywhere, but I feel like that's more important to me. Having them with me, no matter what the job is. There's been situations where I haven't taken jobs because they've said, hey, we don't want your wife to come, or we don't want your family to come. That's a no-go for me. So, I've definitely seen a lot of situations to where it, definitely affects the player and affects, his production on the court.
I can only imagine, though, being in one of those dangerous situations where your passport's being taken when your wife and kid is there as well. I can't imagine how much that exemplifies and makes it even worse and scarier in that situation.
Yeah. At that point, man, it really becomes super real. And you start really, really, like I said, just trying to, be as safe as possible and try to, do as best as you can for not only you and keeping, but also just really, really keeping you and your family safe.
Yeah. Would your wife, I know you guys love Thailand and you're going back, but would she say that's been her best experience as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think, and what makes it so special is that our son's basically spent most of his life there. When you see your kid kind of grow up in one spot, it definitely makes it awesome and makes it super, super impactful on your life, and makes you cherish those memories for sure.
So let's end here, Mike. Your best, let's specifically look at your best experience in the Philippines. Like I said, I know we had a lot of listeners from there. So your best or most memorable experience playing in the Philippines?
Oh, man. Best or most memorable experience. For me, I think my best experience and probably my most memorable game was the first game that I ever played in the Philippines. Played against Tony Mitchell, went to Alabama, big time player. And really in the Philippines, it's, you know, it's import versus import, really. I mean, obviously you
have, oh yeah,
but it's really, it really becomes, hey, I have to be better than that import, for my team to win. And, we went into overtime. We ended up pulling it out. And they were supposed to be one of the best teams, in the league. So, for me, that was probably one of my highlights and one of my, favorite games, because, nobody really knew anything about me. And I was playing on a team that was not considered to be good. And we went out there and kind of, shocked the league and kind of put the league on notice that we weren't, going to be, a bad team, that we were going to be tough. So, that's probably one of my favorite, memories. And I still remember that game.
So just to clarify, when you do ABL, are you bouncing to all those countries at some point have a home game, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you will bounce from time to time, assuming ABL goes through those, yep, Southeast Asian countries.
Yeah, so I'll be bouncing around, and we'll play, you know, obviously we'll play in the Philippines, hopefully, and if Thailand, if my ex-Thailand team, my old team, is back in the ABL, I'll have to go back there and play them one time, so... it'll be interesting, but I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Mike, thank you very much. I really appreciate sitting down and talking with us. And, you know, the players for sure are going to learn a lot from this, hearing about all those opportunities that they may not have known about beforehand. So thank you very much, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Aaron, thanks for having me on.
Thanks, man.
Enjoyed it, man. Have a good day, man.
Thanks. Be safe. Good luck out there. Say hi to the family. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin' sent you. Thank you.
Hey everybody, thank you again for getting through another episode. We really appreciate it. I just want to quick redirect you to where you can find us one more time to kind of close out this whole episode. You can find us at facebook.com/globallyballin, Twitter @globallyballin, Instagram @globallyballinofficial. The name was taken. And patreon.com/globallyballin. Again, what you can find there is all of these episodes music-free as well as ad-free. And a bunch of other tiers that offer you a lot of other stuff. There is a ton of content available for you that you are not getting here that's out there on the Patreon page. So if you want to check that out, that would be great. And then, of course, again, if you like the show, we would really appreciate a rating and a review wherever you listen. I know I normally suggest Apple Podcasts, but if there's a way, you know, if you listen to it somewhere else and there's a way to rate it, that would be great as well. But any of that is very, very helpful and very much appreciated. It does take a lot of work putting these things together and editing them up and making it all mesh together and getting our interviews lined up and all this. So it takes a lot, but we really believe in it, and we encourage you, if you believe in it too, doing one of those things to help us out would be fantastic. Otherwise, simply you listening to our episodes coming out is a huge blessing to us. So thank you very much for supporting the show, and you'll get an episode from us here in the coming days.